a device that you have in your pocket could be a spy that is spying on your life.
In 2020, the journalism nonprofit Forbidden Stories, along with Amnesty International, got access to a leaked list of more than 50,000 phone numbers. They suspected the list contained numbers selected for potential surveillance with a powerful spyware called Pegasus.
Pegasus designed to infect phones like iPhones or Androids.
They were right.
Activists, lawyers, and journalists are reportedly...
Together with journalists from 16 other newsrooms around the world, including Frontline, Forbidden Stories began a year-long investigation into the spyware.
This could be transformative in terms of our understanding of the whole cyber surveillance industry.
They uncovered how Pegasus had been used on journalists, human rights activists, the wife and fiance of the murdered Saudi columnist Jamal Khashoggi, and others. Global Spyware Scandal Exposing Pegasus is the new two-part series from Frontline and Forbidden Films that goes behind the scenes of the investigation. And it chronicles the responses from governments and institutions seeking to govern the largely unregulated spyware industry. I'm joined by Laurent Richard, founder and executive director of Forbidden Stories, and Sandrine Rigaud, the organization's editor-in-chief. I'm Rainey Aronson-Roth, editor-in-chief and executive producer of Frontline, and this is the Frontline Dispatch.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation, committed to excellence in journalism, and by the Frontline Journalism Fund, with major support from John and Joanne Hagler.
Support for Frontline Dispatch comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, dedicated to providing the latest therapies and cancer specialists who are experienced in your cancer. When you hear the word cancer, their team is ready. Learn more at massgeneral.org/cancer.
Laurent and Sandrine, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Renee. Thank you for having me, having us.
Thank you.
If you would, tell me about what is Pegasus. And then when you started to understand what Pegasus was, how did you think about how you would be able to show that?
Yeah. So just to explain Pegasus is a spyware that is able to take control of your device. That means activate your camera, activate your phone. It's like I said during the documentary, it's like a person over your shoulder who will read everything that you are reading, even your encrypted messages. So that's a very sophisticated spyware built by people. Some of them are coming from the military, and it's considered legally in Israel as a weapon. So it's a military weapon used against civilians. So as a citizen, whether you are a journalist or lawyers or political opponents, you really can't do anything against that. So for us, when we start on our side as journalists, when we were getting access to that list, starting to understand that it was about Pegasus, starting to understand that we were talking about thousands of victims all around the world, we understood as well that we need to explain that. So as a producer, the challenge was how to explain something that is extremely virtual, that you can't see, you cannot observe physically an infection. We call that an infection. So the way to do that for us was so as well to film every step of the investigation so we can understand what is at stake. And then, of course, we were having our cameras behind the shoulder of Amnesty International Security Lab, Clodo Garnieri, on their computer to track the traces of infection. So this is the way we try to explain what was Pegasus and how it works and how it's a traumatic experience when you are the victim.
Right. And Sandrine, when you started to learn about this, I mean, were you surprised at the capabilities of Pegasus? Of course, you know, by the time you shared it with all of us, you had absorbed it quite a bit. It was a number of months in. So what was going through your mind?
So you first think of everything you have in your phone. I mean, just imagine how many secrets are stored in your phone, your passwords, your photos, your Google search. Everything is on your phone today, and probably your phone knows more about you than your husband, your kids, your colleagues. So Pegasus, when you understand how Pegasus can be intrusive and can enter your phone without you having Even the slight idea that it is in there, it's just the worst nightmare that could happen. And for an investigative journalist who's in contact with sources, people, they need to protect. Pegasus is just the worst weapon that could be used against an investigative journalist.
Tell me about the moment in which you both received the leak and what that felt like. And I know you can't go into great detail, but tell me as much as you can about that moment.
So when we got access to the leak, of course, we immediately realized how huge the story will be, how difficult the journalism and the investigation will be, how dangerous our reporting will be. And we knew that we should be a lot of journalists working on that. When we got access to the leak, that we needed a collaboration to address that, to investigate properly this. And both our organization and Amnesty International were granted access to that huge leak with only phone numbers. So that was just the beginning. Many things to do to identify the numbers, to find names behind the numbers, and to build some stories, to understand what was the context of that kind of targeting, if the people were really targeting. So that was just the beginning. And of course, we cannot say anything or more about who was providing that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. So I want to ask you and Sandrine a question about the fact that you started to film. What went through your minds when you decided we should document this? And how complex was that at the beginning?
Laurent and myself have both directed documentaries before, so we understand the strength of filming and documenting an investigation with having a camera with you all the time. We immediately realized that this was big and this was almost a one life story for a journalist. I mean, there are huge stories like the Panama Papers, the Snowden revelation that make the big news. Pegasus was something from that scale, and so with that experience of making film, we decided quite immediately that this had to be documented, and this had to be documented live, because we could not reconstruct this later on, and we were living very intense moment. So I think that intensity appears in the film. We've all done big investigations here, and we know that sometimes investigation is really not sexy and boring. I mean, you spend your day behind a computer, you do some phone calls, but from the beginning that investigation was quite different. We had to set up security protocols, contact people who might have been under surveillance, travel in a period of COVID, analyze phone, convince people who have been potentially hacked to give their phones. We had brainstorming session with our partners on the timing. When shall we send the request for comment? What was the best period for that? How do you contact a source? What security you need to take? So, I mean, all these questions were making that investigation something that was very interesting to film and to understand for the audience.
Sandrine and Laurent, you came to visit us in Boston. And when we first sat together, you showed me some sequences that you had been filming. When you guys came, you know, it became abundantly clear that you had to really think about security, even as we were screening, even not the most confidential material. So how much time and energy went into that to keep the information secure?
Clearly, that was almost half the job, because we had to invent new ways to communicate, get new devices, create new protocol, analyze the risk, and of course this was also the case for the filming. Filming might be a very touchy part, because everything is in there. You can take care of the security of your exchanges, of the documents you exchange, but you have to be extremely and even more careful with the footage you have. And so, of course, we won't get into the detail, but the footage was as protected as everything else. So yeah, it took some time, but at the end it was extremely important, because we are speaking about people that are in danger in some countries, people that are who are targeted, and we needed to be the most careful we could.
That's really quite something. It takes expertise on all sorts of different levels beyond just practicing investigative journalism. So let's actually just talk about some of the major revelations from the investigation. What revelations stick with you both the most?
Contacting some people we knew to let them know that they might be under surveillance, to have their phone analyzed and then discover that they were actually hacked was a big thing. And I have in mind Khadija Ismailova, mm-hmm. who is a journalist in Azerbaijan, extremely brave, who spent years in prison and whom we discovered because she was in Laurent's contact book. And so when we matched our contact list with the list, we discover her name. And I mean, seeing the reaction of Khadija let you understand how violent it is to be targeted by Pegasus. I think those human stories are the one probably that that for us are the strongest, because of course knowing that Emmanuel Macron was appearing on the list made the headlines, but people like head of states or politicians might be targeted. I mean, this has already been documented, this is known, and they have means to defend themselves. But people like Khadija, like journalists in Morocco, journalists in Bahrain, have no means to fight against that. And of course, these are for us, I think, the strongest and the most important revelations. Until the Pegasus Project, cyber surveillance was a very abstract topic. And I think what the Pegasus Project was able to do is really show the faces of the victim for the first time.
Yeah, I think that actually, Sandrine, is something that I would say was the most revelatory, is as you all, you know, sat with the people who were victims of this, watching their faces as they were thinking about everything that was on their phones. As you said, you think about the people you talk to, your family, you think about all, like, you know, the things that you talk about in earnest. And so seeing their faces was really the first time I had, thought deeply about the impact of this, the true impact of this on the people who were, potentially surveilled. So Laurent, what sticks with you the most?
For me, what was really impressive is that how large the misuse of the spyware was. That we were having like human rights activists in Mexico, journalists in France, political opponents in some countries in Africa, Khadija Ismailova in Azerbaijan, the wife and the fiancé, the two women around Jamal Khashoggi being targeted. And I was really impressed, surprised by the scale of the scandal that we were revealing, that all those people were basically sharing something in common. They were fighting for democracies because they were journalists. They were challenging their powers. And that spyware became a kind of the magic toy for some dictators, from some oppressive regime, or many other leaders who wanted to track abroad their own dissidents or the people who are challenging them. So I was really shocked by the scale of that. And of course, I was also very impressed by the level of how governments were lying. Remember, during the Snowden revelation, the way in the US or other countries were reacting to after the Snowden revelation was, you have nothing to worry about if you are not a criminal, if you're not a terrorist. And NSO was having the same kind of narrative when they are selling the spyware. They sell that officially to catch the bad guys. And maybe in our society, we need spyware to prevent terrorist attack, of course. We need everything to prevent terrorist attack. But on that list, and after the investigation done by Amnesty Security Lab on the forensic side, we learned that many journalists, lawyers, people who were not terrorists. Khadija Ismailova, she's not a terrorist, she's not a criminal, and she was the victim of that. So I was really impressed by, Yes, the status where we are. You have a private company selling a military weapon to state actors and nobody's controlling that. There is a lack of regulation. And I hope that we did create a large conversation over the planet about that.
The journalism behind the Frontline Dispatch is possible thanks to the support of you, our listeners. Join us in supporting journalism that holds our leaders accountable and pursues the truth wherever it may lead by making a gift at frontline.org/dispatch. Thank you.
So, Laurent, I know we could never get NSO to sit down with us, so that was always a challenge to represent their point of view. Can you tell me what did they think about the reporting that we did, and what did they tell us?
Yeah, so NSO did not accept any interview with us. They did reply to some question about some numbers that we thought they were targeted. But basically, the position of NSO that NSO is denying that their spyware have been used against some journalists or against some lawyers. They deny, for instance, if we just speak about something extremely sensitive, the surveillance of the two women around Jamal. We find traces of infection on the two devices of the two women. They deny that. So just about the position of NSO, they deny any kind of involvement in that. They explain that they only sell that to state actors, that the state actors, and it's true, are the one using that. So we should keep that in mind. It's not NSO targeting the people. It's government. So that's what NSO wanted to say and to explain. The thing is, when NSO went to the European Parliament to provide answers, and basically that's the only public hearing that we have so far from NSO, so the only chance that we got to get some answers, NSO was explaining that they cannot say publicly a lot of things. They cannot reveal who are the customers. They cannot reveal exactly what are their policy against potential misuse. So they are not very precise, because most of the questions are under national security classification. So this is their position.
Let's actually talk about the impact of this reporting and what's happened after you published.
The revelation had a huge impact in the short term first, because they were protests in countries in Hungary, in India, and of course one of the major decision was the decision from the US to blacklist NSO, and I think this decision was really important because it came from the US, and because it was a very, very symbolic one. The European Parliament is investigating the misuse of Pegasus in Europe, and I think this I don't know what decision will be taken, but at least this is really putting that topic in a global place, and is part of the conversation. It's we're actually not doing any advocacy, we're just journalists, we're just revealing things, so we don't have solutions. We understand that it's those spyware might be needed to fight against terrorism or criminals, but what we are seeing is that the scale of the misuse is way too important to be ignored.
And Laurent, can you get us up to date on the NSO's perspective and what the latest is?
So the latest news is that the CEO of NSO resigned. He's not anymore the CEO. So he's now involved in another company. They are still denying that the spyware were used against some journalists. But they were in a difficult situation because they say on one end, when they do sell a spyware to a customer, they say, we sell you this spyware and we will never know about your targets. On the other hand, they say, we are able to investigate the misuse by if there is a misuse. So we can know the target if we get the permission from the customer. So the reaction from NSO was first to deny. But then all over the world, we were having many other reactions, protests in India. The French head of state were making some defense committee over 2 or 3 days, were asking the some people from the government, defense minister of Israel, to come to Paris to answer some question. In the US, the US authorities put NSA on the blacklist, making sure that not a single American-based company will be able now to contract with the NSO group. And that was extremely, I think, damaging for the business plan of NSO. There is first some complaints against NSO from WhatsApp, from Apple, but some from journalists as well. So it's there is a movement. The thing is, okay, we are 1.5 years after the revelation. What do we have in place seriously to protect the citizens? And honestly, there is quite nothing yet. And if you continue investigating, which this is what we do about the cyber surveillance, we see how resilient this industry is. And the problem is not NSO. The problem is not the spyware. The problem is the regulation around that. And so far, that's the Wild West. And the industry is extremely resilient, extremely secretive, and the business is extremely lucrative. So this is where we are and why we need people from the civil society, Congress people, people who are in power, in charge, to be involved in the conversation.
Well, I thank you and Sandrine for all the hard work and the work of Forbidden Stories and Forbidden Films. The documentary is incredible, and I really thank you for approaching Frontline as well with this remarkable material, and it's just been amazing to collaborate with you all.
Yeah, likewise. And thank you, Rani, and all the Frontline team for giving us a chance to work with the Frontline team. That's so crucial that we do share a lot together about journalism, and telling a story like that on Frontline is, for us and for all the partners, really an honor and so crucial to make sure that we understand what is at stake when we talk about cyber surveillance and threats for democracy.
Thank you so much, Laurent. Really appreciate it. Thank you both for being on The Dispatch.
Thank you, Rani.
Thank you, Rani.
Thank you so much to Laurent Richard and Sandrine Rigaud for joining me on The Dispatch. You can watch parts 1 and 2 of Global Spyware Scandal Exposing Pegasus on Frontline.org, Frontline's YouTube channel, and the PBS video app. This podcast was produced by Emily Pizzacreta. Maria Diocno is our Director of Audience Development. Catherine Guiwart is our Editorial Coordinating Producer. Frank Kuhn is our Senior Producer. Lauren Azell is our Senior Editor of Investigations. Andrew Metz is our Managing Editor. I'm Renee Aronson-Roth, Editor-in-Chief and Executive Producer of Frontline. Music in this episode is by Stellwagen Symphonette. The Frontline Dispatch is produced at GBH and powered by PRX. Thanks for listening.